Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Q Podcast. I am joined today by Chad Douglas and Matthew Schmidt. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're here to talk about, TV broadcasting here in Quincy, KHQA, WGM, just everything and anything you guys want to talk about.
Cool.
I'd like to start with your guys' career together. How did you guys first meet in the industry, and how did that develop over time?
Since Matt's older, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, so I started at KHQA in 1996, and your internship started within a few months of that.
I started in the fall of 97.
So it started that way, and then he got hired, and when KHQA moved to the South 36 location in 98, then Chad and I were both pretty much full-time, and for the next 11 years, even though for a while we had same schedules, but most of the time we honestly never worked together. Yeah. I had the night shift, he had the morning shift, and just common interest, became good friends, and even when I left for WGM, we stayed friends, and here we are.
Yeah.
15 years after that, 20 years after that, working together again with the Salvation Army.
Yeah, so over that time working in TV, was there a lot of, did you go through a lot of the phase changes of technology and different formats and stuff at different stations? And how did that change and how did you guys adapt over time with that?
When I started in 1994 in Southern Illinois, WSIL, as a reporter and producer. Mm-hmm. So when I'd go out on stories, you would take it was a 3/4-inch tape at the time. But the tape was not in the camera. It was in a separate machine that you had to have a cord hooked up to. So you had a bag over your shoulder. You had a camera on one shoulder. And then you had a tripod. And we're talking at least 50 pounds of equipment every time, one man banding. So it was, and I'm sure people who've been in the industry a lot longer would be like, oh, that was nothing. But still, for somebody new in the business, this was a lot of equipment. When you went back to edit, it was tape-to-tape editing. There was no, you had to find exactly what you wanted. And you used the 10 or 15 seconds you needed of that and dubbed it to the tape, and it had a backup, so you'd set the input and the out point, and as it started editing, it would back up a few seconds, and so it was not meant for fast editing. So if you came back for breaking news at 10 till the 6 o'clock newscast, you may not still make it because it just took a while. So a lot of times, you had to shoot to air. So if you knew you were on a breaking news story, fire something, you shot it like it was going to go right to air. And so when you came back, that way you could just pop the tape right in, just play it live to air.
Yeah. And you also forgot the lighting kit that went with the one-man banding that was easily 2,000 degrees when you were done. So it's like you could pack up easily and go about your merry little way. But, yeah, that was a lot of stuff to carry.
And those bulbs would blow out.
Yes.
Yeah. Very hot. On my last podcast, I had Sarah Dian.
Yeah.
And she talked about the exact same tripod, everything being heavy and carrying it. You starting out in field reporting, that must be backbreaking work.
I have to ask, did Sarah tell you about
HLG?
her VTR pack that got run over by a fire truck?
She did not.
Oh, I'd love to tell you that. Yeah, she was covering the big fire at HLG back in, what was that, like 89 or something?
Okay.
And again, she had the separate VTR deck that connected by a big massive video cable, and it was laying off the curb in the street, and of course, fire trucks coming in and out of a massive fire, and crunch.
I mean, they're not looking for that stuff. I bet that has to be a big, big oops back then. But like today, we don't have that much equipment to keep track of. So I guess the biggest thing you do is like drop your phone in the street. Back then, you got so much to take care of. That must have been overwhelming back then.
My first week on the job at KHQA, I went to the Blessing Conference Center and I set up the big heavy tripod, went ahead and put the big heavy camera on it, and then walked away to get my interview, and the tripod leg went out of it, and all I heard was the crash as the big camera crashed to the ground. So then I have to trudge back up to the station and be like, day two, I'm like, I broke the camera.
Yeah.
They're like, no, it happens, no big deal. They made me feel good about it. It wasn't a few days later, I had a different tripod, and I was at County Market and set up the tripod. I walked away, the leg gave out, and it crashed through their donut case. And apparently this glass they used for the donut case was imported glass. So so a week into the job, I'd already broken a camera, broke a multi-thousand-dollar probably piece of glass, and thought I was going to be fired.
Then they stuck him behind the desk.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that is amazing. So just these trouble with equipment, I bet that is just there's so much of it, and you were so new. Now these days, everything is compact and a little easier. Did you notice these updates as they came along, or were they so small and sporadic that it was like, it's the same old for most of the time?
No, I think the updates and technology changed drastically. When we started, both Matt and I, KHQA was on the 9th and 10th floor of the WCU building, and we used typewriters, typed out our scripts. They were copied on 3 different colors of paper. Someone had to tape the paper together to run it on a belt that fed the teleprompter so the anchors could read it. And then when we moved to the new place on South 36, we got a computer. And then the internet came.
Yeah.
And so that was cool, and that was different to learn. And then when the transition to digital went in 2009, that was a whole different thing of high definition versus standard definition. And, boy, I don't know that it actually really ever happened for us, at least at KHQA during my time there. And then social media changed everything, and cell phones and cameras. And you can do everything that we used to do on these old cameras and equipment on your phone. Mm-hmm. You can edit stories. I've done it.
Yeah, and that is both a blessing and a curse. Mm-hmm. It allows a lot of people opportunities to, you know, start their own podcasts or their own little news things on YouTube, but it also causes people that are like in the community or in the veterans of communication community to lose these like important jobs that they've had, that stations are like, we can have one person do 5 jobs that used to take, you know, like 5 people. So
Or robotics.
Yeah, it's all digital.
The other thing with the phone is like it's with you all the time. So it was like, sure, you worked your 8 hours a day and then you went home and then you work some more because something happens. You get an email or you see something on Twitter and, you know, you got to be first. So
Yeah, 24-hour news is just the norm for everybody now. So
So when we started, the 6 o'clock newscast was what you consider the predominant time of day to watch news, that you thought that people planned their day, you know, around 6 o'clock, we're sitting down, this is where we're getting our news from. And basically that was true. You didn't have phones then. And so if you wanted to know what was happening, it was 6 o'clock. So I've always been of that mindset, 6 o'clock newscast, 5 o'clock newscasts were important. But once you got into the more people started having cable access and started getting CNN and started getting other access, and then suddenly the internet comes along, and then suddenly, oh, I can do apps with news. You were outdated. The 6 o'clock newscast has really lost any impact it has because of the reason you have to get that information right away. So you're either you're putting it out on social media, the story, you're putting, you know, snippets out here. So that old fashioned way of, hey, don't forget, the 6 o'clock news is where you can get all everything. It's really lost the luster.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of respect for that kind of journalism, because there is that work that's put into it, but now it seems there's so much news that's kind of diluted that trust. So seeing that change in my lifetime has been the most interesting, I think, because I do remember growing up, like in just the early 2000s, seeing the news and being like, "Whoa, you know, like this is like a big deal." In my eyes, just things like 9/11 and stuff like that. They all were covered by competent people. You know, it all worked out, even though the technology isn't advanced as today. But and today we have people with super advanced technology, but it seems their reporting skills are not exactly the same. So
9/11 changed the way news is reported too, because it happened live on air.
Yeah.
It happened during the national morning shows, and so they've got a camera fixed on the towers, and then that second plane hit, and all of a sudden, that's happening right in front of your eyes. And then, you know, when the tower fell with the antennas on top, the city of New York lost a ton of communication.
Mm-hmm.
TV, radio towers were all up on top. I mean, it's cool here in Quincy. Cool is probably the wrong word to use, but down at City Hall Plaza, there's part of that tower because it came from Quincy.
Oh,
with Harris, they built the transmitter, so that's part there. So it's always cool to stop in and see. Again, cool, wrong word to use, but it's nice to go down there and kind of reflect and just know that what happens here in Quincy does touch other parts of the world, even though it was through tragedy. So that was a game changer too in coverage.
Yeah, definitely.
And just to play off of that too, I think that was one of those events too that I think you can humanize reporters and anchors, because sometimes it's easy to cover an event and you just kind of, you're so focused on your job that you're not empathizing with what you're covering, you know, a fire or somebody's lost something, tornadoes or stuff, you know, you're not empathizing. that day kind of, I think, changed the mindset of it really, you know, I remember sitting home that morning watching stuff and I'm like, oh my gosh, what's our world going to be like? And then like, yeah. Not thinking about how we're going to report this and stuff like that. You're like, you're caught up and like, this is changing. This is a game changer for everything. And mm-hmm. even being on air that night, there was a couple times I caught myself as like, I'm getting a little emotional here. It's kind of a step away. So you really, it was one of those events where it was hard to separate personal from professional.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Well, to the journalists who were covering it that day, I mean, to speak to you, Matt, was like, if you covered a fatal fire or a car crash, you had time before the newscast to kind of compose yourself. You can kind of process what happened. This was happening live on TV, and those reporters on the national networks were covering it live. And
they had debris on them. They were there with people on
their
the ground.
Their lives are in danger.
Their lives are in danger. Yes, of course. Yeah. It's I don't want to get, you know, I don't want to talk about 9/11 the whole time, even though it is very important. Yeah. So let's talk about another thing that people don't want to hear about, COVID. So the coverage of COVID has been strewn with like misinformation. You know, there's always this debate of like, you know, who do you trust? Is it the mainstream media? Is it local broadcasting? Is it everybody on your phone? Do you think coverage of this kind of global pandemic would have been better about 10, maybe 20 years ago? And how do you think it would have played out differently?
I think you hit it right on the head. If it's totally different 20 years ago, because I think social media took over the story and how the talking point went. So no matter what local national media try to do, because one thing about COVID in the early days, it was developing every day. So nobody was false reporting. They were reporting what they knew at the times. Mm-hmm. So then a month later, things had changed. But then you go back to social media and somebody's going to pull up a month old script like, but you said this back then. Well, yeah, but we have totally new information now. And so that kind of hurt news reporting, and everybody's like, well, you're just reporting fake news. No, I think the social media is what's keeping the fake news going. So that was – COVID really brought that competition into full light, as you have professionals trying to do one job, and you have amateurs thinking, oh, but I found another article that disproved that, and you went from there.
Yeah, definitely.
I agree.
Yeah. No, it's just been interesting seeing it unfold, because as a kid my parents' view of the news was very respectful, you know. So it's like, you know, they don't let the kids watch it because it's serious, but you know, they made it like they did watch it and they listened and absorbed from it. But now it is like they don't even trust the stations they used to listen to. So it is interesting seeing that that change. And I think COVID is just such a broad thing that everyone was able to see it a little more out in the open, you know.
And I will say I was glad I was not in the business during pandemic.
Yes.
One, because of sometimes it happens when you get in such a big story, it's what you do every day, and you get really bored with it. You're like, oh, please, something else happen so we can move on. But we couldn't move on with COVID; it dominated. I think I lost my point what I was going with beforehand, but.
I was in it. I was toward the tail end of my stuff during COVID, because it started in March and I left the station on April 3rd of 2020. So I had just about a month, about 3 weeks of it. And it was exactly that. I mean, everything was you lived and breathed COVID, and it was all new information. And it was trying to get the stuff out there and trying to say, this is the stuff you need to hear, where you would see somebody post on a social medium and it would be not true, but people read it and they believe it. And that's, I think, the most frustrating thing with me with social media is, you know, people come up to me and be like, the media is lying and it's ruined this world. I'm like, social media has done that. Yeah. Media, still trust the media. And I also say, don't watch news networks and stuff that only tell you what you want to hear.
Yeah.
You should have an opinion and you should disagree with stuff they say, but you've got to trust that they're giving you the facts. That this, you know, we spent 20 years in this business, and it's just like there's no difference in me going to an auto mechanic who's fixing my car and say, nope, I think you're doing that wrong. What you need to do is this with that belt and the serpentine thing. I don't know what I'm doing. This person's trained for that. We are trained for that. We had classes in law and ethics, and like, trust us a little bit.
Yeah.
Trust us a lot of bit.
That's the point I was going with, is the there is no agenda. Yeah. Local news, there was never an agenda. I don't care what people like to say, that we were young kids trying to get through the day on a story. And that's the way it's always been. These are 20-year-old reporters in this market. They're just trying to cover the story. And sometimes they may not ask the right questions, or they hear a soundbite they'd like in the use. But there is no – they're not going into the, like, I'm out to burn somebody. I'm out to push a liberal or conservative agenda. They're just trying to get through the day and do the story the best they can. So that always kind of bothered me. Like, oh, you know, local media, they just – they're going to tell you what you think you need to know. Yeah, that's not it. They're just – they're trying to come up with a story idea, and when they find one and they do it, that's all they're doing. They're trying to get through the workday.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with local media, it's – I think people forget that those people live in that community, you know, and especially because, like, bigger stations or people online will criticize them, saying they're just pushing agenda or just whatever they want to hear. You know, those people are in that community, and so they have to face the people they talk to. So I think they're just saying what they believe is the news, you know. Right. So, yeah, I do understand that.
And that kind of goes back to my point with the national media of some arguably do have an agenda push, but you need to know that. And mm-hmm. don't just get your news from a source that's going to tell you everything you want to hear. You right. need to hear the other side of things.
Okay. So how do you – now that you guys are not – broadcasting anymore. How do you guys get your news these days?
So it's funny, after I left the business, I was still in the mindset that everybody watched TV news to get their thing. And then my life just, I'm busy with kids and doing stuff, and I didn't watch the news as much. And I honestly don't watch much TV news today. So usually notifications pop up on my phone like this yeah. is happening. If I'm interested in the headline, I'll read the article. And yeah. When I'm getting ready in the morning, national news is on, and radio news, top of the hours type stuff. If I'm in the car, because I'm more of a talk radio type person, so that's mm-hmm. where I get it. But I hate to say, TV news is not where I get it from. I'll watch it every now and then from home, but I don't schedule my day around it.
Yeah, and I'm kind of the same way. I mean, I spent years on the morning show, so I'll have it on in the morning, kind of in the background, more to get the weather for the day and the next couple of days. But again, busy with kids and life, and the phone will give me the news alerts I want. I do watch national news. Again, it's on in the morning when I'm going, getting ready. On the weekends, I'll throw it on as well. Some of the Sunday morning talk shows, just kind of there, and
yeah.
it kind of infuriates me a little bit when you yeah. when you get them going.
Well, yeah. honestly, I'm only in bed by 10 o'clock a lot of times, so it's like you're just not watching the news.
Yeah, but and even at night, I mean,
but like I say, the phone is probably your place where you're going, whether you're going right to one of the local stations' websites or something else. That's usually yep. where I start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I think people's like how they want to absorb the news hasn't changed. Like, they still want that morning talk show kind of vibe, but it's been replaced by podcasts and more on online kind of formats, because then they can cater it to themselves, you know, like and that's a plus and a minus, you know. If you, there are the people who only watch what they want to watch, and that can make their opinion a little bit harsher than it should. But there's other people who can absorb all that information and then find the truth, you know, in the lines.
And you get it when you want it, yeah. when it's on your phone. You can go to the website you want, or you can listen to the podcast you want on your own time.
Yeah, and it can be so specific, because if you want to know about a specific thing, you don't have to wait for it to be mentioned on the news. You don't have to go through all this other news, which might be helpful back then, because you might pick up something you weren't interested about, and then they say it and you're like, oh, you know, like, and then you know more about that story later. But now it's, yeah, if I want to know something, I can find it instantly, and then my question's answered. Don't think about it again. It could be the wrong answer. Mm-hmm. It's just because it's usually the first one I find.
But then you're not going to see what else the news has to offer, because yeah. you only went for that specific story.
Yeah, yeah. I think that is the major downfall of the internet being the main source of news these days.
It's a blessing and a curse. Like I said, when it came along, it made research easier, because mm-hmm. a lot of times before that, I mean, you had to wait to get back to the news station and call people on a desk phone. We didn't, you know, phones weren't that common yet, cell phones. So you had to do a lot of just pick up the phone and call people to find out everything you need to know. You couldn't just Google it. Mm-hmm. So as we went along, that became great, and it provided a lot more background information. And then social media comes along, and as staffs got smaller, or it was hard to get places, it was great, because if we couldn't get an hour away, there's somebody there that could take a picture on their phone and send it to us online. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, we have this, or we have some video of something we couldn't get to. So you had a lot more citizen reporters working for you. But then on the backside is when you had stories and you post them online or social media, the trolls come out and they're just picking it apart with no background information, just think their opinion is what matters and what little facts they have is all they need to go with. And so false information started becoming the narrative and you're like, this isn't right. But yet, hey, I'm the loudest speaker here online or I'm shaming other people. And so the good content's going away and everybody else is just, going back and forth on things that have nothing to do with the story anymore. And so that got disturbing. I still hate, and it still goes on today when, it's just like, if you really don't have the facts, don't comment. And but yet everybody, especially crime stories, you see stuff, everybody's got it figured out and is, making the verdict already. And it's like, there's no fair shot for anybody anymore in news coverage.
Yeah. Crime podcasts are one of the biggest things right now, and there are so many people who claim to have figured out these things. Like, I forget which serial killer it was, but it's still officially unsolved because, no detective's going to be like, they got it. these internet sleuths, they figured it out. But, like, everyone's convinced on the internet now that, oh, we figured it out. And that's just taken as fact. No one's, there are people who are like, well, it's obviously not because of this, and no one's listening to that because the conclusion's made, the mob has figured it out. Right. And so that is kind of how it goes these days. So speaking of technology and getting news stories out, the speed it took near the end, working in your career, like digital, how fast did it take from getting, like, hearing the first hint of a story to getting it out there to back when you first started? Like, I heard so-and-so his truck caught on fire, go figure it out. Like, how fast is that process from the beginning to when you guys ended?
I mean, to get the story was always, could be relatively quickly. If you got a news tip on something, it's a phone call. Once it's confirmed, you got it.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the old days, so to speak, then you had to wait for the news at 6 o'clock to get it. Nowadays, it's like, as soon as you get a phone call, it's tap, tap, type, and it's done on a news alert or it's on Facebook, anything to get it out fast. Yeah. We always, our management at KHQA always said, like, be right before you're fast. Because we had a couple instances where a verdict was tweeted out wrong. Yeah. So then you have to kind of retract that and cover up some stuff. That's the wrong verbiage to use. Yeah. We're talking about facts and stuff. But, once you tweet it out, you can delete the tweet, but it's there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So be careful, and that's some good advice for any students going out there, is like, be correct before you're first.
So with all of the analog equipment early on in your career, were mistakes common, or was there so many people working on their own jobs that it seemed like it worked smoothly? Because today, glitches can happen, the internet cannot work, things like that, but I know back in the day, tape could get messed up, or things could break. Yeah.
You probably didn't go... You're lucky to go a newscast. You're always, if you ended a newscast with a perfect, you were relieved because, like you said, it could be as simple as tape rolled 5 seconds later than it should, so then nothing was matching. Sometimes the wrong video was running over a story and really made it inappropriate. And a lot of times you, as an anchor, you just have to call. It's like, I'm sorry, you're seeing the wrong video, because sometimes maybe the control room doesn't realize the wrong thing's rolling. So, when you had to do tape to tape to tape to tape, as they got ready for the newscast, if we had a busy night, the camera operators, there'd probably be a stack of 20 tapes, and they had to make sure they're in the right order. You had to number them. There was a story and a number, and somebody's back there, and I think we only had maybe two, sometimes three tape machines in the back, so they always had to have those ready to go. The director had to know which machine it was in, so they punched. I mean, so there was a lot of coordination to go to make sure everything went perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the audio person is a key person. They could clip your mic. They could, shut you off early. Somebody had a hot mic. So I'd say in the analog days, it took a lot to make sure you had a perfect newscast.
Yeah.
And even in the digital days, because computers took those jobs away, so no longer was there a person running tapes. There was no longer a person running camera. There's no longer a person running audio. And even directing, they used to switch it live with a bunch of buttons. Now it's a space bar. Everything's done ahead of time, programming it in. But then you have computer errors. You have network errors. The internet goes down. A server drops. Then you lose everything. Where if back in the day, if one tape rolled wrong, maybe we're just going to go to the next story and kind of get back on track. Now if something goes down, I was on a morning show once, and our commercial server went, just kind of petered out and didn't work. So we did it was a 2-hour show, 75 of 90 minutes commercial free. And you mean commercial breaks are important. One, they pay salaries, but two, it's time to kind of revamp and get things back on track if there is a problem. And so we just sat there and talked and read the same stories, and God bless her, the weather girl got a lot of camera time that day. Yeah. Like, hey, let's go back and get that forecast again.
Yeah. How long was it out for?
It was like 75 minutes.
Oh,
wow. Just straight, straight broadcasting. Yeah.
Cut to commercial. Okay. Never mind. Let's continue. Yeah. Wow. That is intense.
And on the analog days, when you talk about the tape machines, you know, electronics are great, but wear and tear wears them out quickly. And when they're done, they're done.
Yeah.
If that happens during a newscast, oh well.
Yeah, I'm afraid to watch our old tapes we have in storage because, you know, I'm unfamiliar with that kind of recorders and the just anything that's. You have anything to click shut. Yeah, anything that you have to click shut, and they're like, and now it's good. I'm like, that seems wrong. Like, I seem like I broke it, you know, and so I'm worried that I'll, accidentally turn it the wrong way and something will just snap. So I'm.
Or the machine eats the tape.
Or the machine eats the tape, because that used to happen when I was a kid at my grandma's house, and so that's all my memory of tape.
We had one day where we would run our network, or not our network, but our syndicated programming, and at the time, KHQA carried the Oprah show. And it's running off one of the tape decks, and I went back to the control room to queue up a tape and just hit eject. And suddenly, Oprah, all over the tri-states, stopped. So I put it back in real quick and hit the wrong button, and I started fast-forwarding. I was like, control room was not very happy with Chad that day.
Yeah.
Like, why are you even here?
Oh, wow.
But every news story, you had to edit a countdown before your story, and then I think you had to leave 2 seconds of black, and then the story began. So that the countdown was the operators cue that, okay, cue it up to the black part. And so that way, as we're anchor is reading and say Chad Douglas reporting, they hit play. And as soon as the director sees video, go. We probably had a countdown at newscast. There was, because they'd back it up too far and they'd, oh, it's black. There we go. And then suddenly you have to watch 5, 4, 3. And you're like, ugh. You know, so the countdown is live on air. So that was one thing I was not sad to see go away when you went to digital and everything just played right out.
And in TV time, 5 seconds is an eternity when you're sitting there waiting for something to pop up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I could just feel the stress of that because we do a smaller version here with our studio because everything is digital. But, you know, everyone's given the jobs like, oh, you have to line up the next the clip. You got to get the commercial ready, you know, and you're on sound to make sure that this person's mic's turned up and then turn this one down, you know, like, and seeing those problems happen firsthand and being a part of it, it can't, even at this level, is like the most stressful thing. So yeah, the Oprah story, I can see this, like the pan, you know, and then you're pressing buttons trying to fix it. Yeah.
Like, so your heart sinks, your stomach drops. You're like, oh, what did I just do?
Yeah. So a lot of times we produced our own newscast. So I produced and then anchored the evenings, and then for some time there, you had to do the mornings by yourself before they actually hired producers. And so you're sitting on desk, and you're trying to be in anchor mode, but your mind's also thinking, okay, there's a couple of stories coming up here, make sure everything's going right. And so you rely heavily on the people in the control room, and you know, the unsung heroes sometimes, but you get used to a director. And when that director, and you get a good team going, you're like, okay, I have confidence. And then, oh, they're on vacation, and you're like, freaking out for that week. You're like, oh no, I don't work with this person and they don't know how I like things. And so a lot of people don't realize you're doing two things when you're at the desk. You're producing and you're trying to anchor, and you're trying to, you know, think 3 steps ahead while you're still concentrating on that story. And you're like, oh, I hope this director and audio person and everything there don't mess this up.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But you're still a team. You got, everybody has to work together. And but yeah, it's stressful.
We'll kind of change channels here. I have to ask this to all my guests. What is your best memory in the communication field? Just so as your whole career, what is your greatest memory? Like, I had Jeff Dorsey on, he said it's when he interviewed Bill Clinton, you know, and Sarah said it was when Obama was coming, you know, and that was a whole big event. So just what is your greatest memory?
Well, when you asked the question, my initial thing was the people I worked with.
Yeah.
Because you go through a lot together. It's like Matt just said, it's very stressful.
Mm-hmm.
You get to form these friendships with the people on air, off air, and it's kind of like a family. You deal with a lot of bad things sometimes, with tragedy and everything. And anytime I can use a platform to kind of promote mental illness and help for that. I think that's lacking in this industry so much because first responders see a lot and they have access to mental health, but the TV reporters don't, and I think they should. And if they need help, they should feel comfortable enough to ask for help because that's why it's there. But that, to me, I think is the friendships I made throughout the time. And there can be some ego in the TV industry. And I always said, you know, all of us have a little bit of ego. Otherwise, we'd be in, like, print journalism. You know, you like that part of being on TV or whatever. But in my time there, and I was there 22 years, there were only a couple people that I was like, cool, you got another job. Good luck. Everyone else, you kind of develop that relationship, and it's like you're happy for them, but you're sad to see them go.
Yeah. No, I definitely – yeah, the bonds you create along the way. That's definitely – yeah, a good answer. I that's the most, I think, you know, like, oh, that's sweet kind of answer I've gotten. I like that. I like that a lot.
I also interviewed Barack Obama.
They never said the same thing about leaving Chad. They're like, oh, my gosh, we're out of there.
That's why they got another job.
Yeah. So hard on us. Yeah.
I can never come up with just one moment that I think that was the best because there was after 20 years it's hard to nail that, but I always loved election nights. Always put so much effort into the weeks ahead and study the candidates and put the actual result graphics together. So there was a lot going on, and I just loved how fast paced it was. Things are happening on the fly. Wanted to be the first to call at local races and stuff like that. And so I remember the 2001 because we had. Al Gore had come through Quincy, and I think I went to Bloomington to cover George Bush. And so then that night we have, you know, we're covering everything. And, of course, that was the night of the ballots in Florida. And we didn't, you know, we're so used at the time that we're going to know who the president is by 10 o'clock. And that was probably the first time we had to wait. And it was like 2 a.m. when they finally said, yeah, we're not going to have anything tonight. So, I mean, it was a late night, but it was just things were happening. This was history in the making, and you were part of it. And so I always enjoyed election nights for that reason. One of the first things I remember is 1996, so I'd only been on the job 3 or 4 months, and they had the plane crash at the airport, so I spent a lot of time out there. But it was when they sent me to Washington, D.C. The following summer or so to cover the NTSB report of that. So I'm, what I've been at the time, 21, 22 years old, flying out to Washington by myself, and so... You had to take all the equipment with you, and we talked about how, everything you take, but to run the camera stuff, they had belt packs, battery belt packs. So as that's going through the security screening, and this is pre-9/11 security screening, the guy stopped it and looked at it and goes, huh, these look like little tiny dynamite sticks. And I'm like, they're battery packs, you know. So even then they're like, they were suspicious of it until they took it out and looked at it. Oh, okay, it's just that. But so I'm like, what am I going to do? They're flagging me for carrying, you know, bomb making equipment.
Yeah, it's like an old Looney Tunes bit where it's like a perfect dynamite stick in the X-ray. And he's
Acme.
Like, yeah.
But and then I had to go rent a car. Well, I'm 22. You're supposed to be 25, so I don't know how I talked my way into that. But eventually, I got a car, and then I'm trying to figure out how to drive around Washington because those streets are ridiculous. And
oh my, yeah.
So, but when it was all said and done, I ended up doing a live report from the CBS studios. So I'm seeing all these, you know, CBS anchors and people like that. So it was an amazing experience, but I was like, I don't know how I ever got there and back in one piece.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Sorry.
Well, just a quick story. You mentioned President Obama. He was the senator in Illinois and came through the area a couple of times. And he was in Keokuk, Iowa for election stop when he was running for president in 2008. And myself and another WGM reporter were there covering it. And his handlers kind of said, no media except for local media. Okay. So we go back, interview him and everything, and then the other reporter has a camera, pre-cell phone cameras, and takes a picture with him. And she's like, Chad, you want your picture? And I was like, no, because I don't want to show any type of, you know, bias in the media or whatever. So I didn't. Then he's elected president. And I'm like, oh, idiot. I could have had a picture with a U.S. president.
Yeah,
how cool would
that
be?
That.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And also thinking, favorite part, I think, and it happened later in my career where I found kind of a little niche of doing stories on taboo subjects that people didn't like to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I did one on infertility, and I did one on miscarriage and mental health and childhood anxiety, suicide prevention, childhood cancer, and stuff that I think is so common, but people just, they don't want to talk about it. I'm like, but we should be talking about this. Yeah. And I think that's probably some of my most proud work of just getting it out and advocating for people who couldn't because I had a platform to do so. Yeah. And I had management that was like, hey, buddy, if you want to go talk about miscarriage, go for it. I'm like, we should be.
Yeah, I think that's very I think that's very rare that to have that backing for something so so noble is sticking up for people like that, yeah. You know, making sure they get that awareness. We get so many students here in the communication department that are, that is their focus, you know, in their mind is helping others and, mm-hmm. and trying to get mental awareness out there. So that is cool that there are people leading the way already in the community.
Yeah,
so,
good stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And we talked a lot about the the analog, the difficulties, but that was some of the best days in TV and, you know, because I think we were all 20-year-olds at the time, so you didn't have kids yet to worry about. Most of us were single or just married, but it was fun times. And like when Bill Clinton came to town after the State of the Union, we were all signed. It was probably the first really big event we all covered, and we all had our different assignments, designations, and that we just had a blast that day.
Yeah,
and afterwards, and so it was just a fun time. Especially afterwards, hanging. Everybody got along. Everybody hung out. Everybody did things together. So. I think it's a good bonding time and made a lot of obviously lifelong friends and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think if things like that happened today, like a president comes to town, I don't think there would be those kind of connections in the media anymore, and there'd be one guy out there getting the story, and then somebody bad mouthing on the internet, and that's about as much as we hear about it. There wouldn't be these big. It wouldn't be a big local event anymore. So just because everyone's on their phone, at least in my mind.
Right, or protests, or more protests than anything.
I mean, more
no
protests.
Matter what, you're going to get protests. But that day, I remember the community just was honored to have him there, and there was just a lot of pomp and circumstance.
Well, I think Bill Clinton was the everybody's kind of president at the time. You know, he's played the saxophone.
It was the day after the State of the Union, so it was a huge deal because even the national media, he gave a State of the Union, says this is what we've done, this is what we're working toward, and then he came to Quincy, Illinois to promote that.
Yeah,
I mean, that's pretty fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a once in a lifetime type of thing.
Well,
yeah.
President Obama came later too.
Well, yeah, that was after a president. That was after the precedent was put there by the previous administration. You know, he was following in the footsteps of Clinton, I think, because that is a good tactic coming to places like here, reaching these kind of people we're not near Chicago. You know, I think everyone wants to go to Chicago. So yeah, I think having presidents and people come here is a big deal. Yeah. You know,
you hear I'm from Illinois. I live in Illinois. Like, oh, what part of Chicago? I'm like, 5 hours south?
Yeah.
And President Obama was even different than the Clinton visit because President Clinton just went into downtown Quincy and was gone, whereas President Obama, I think, went to Keokuk, so they helicoptered him there, so he had to have coverage there. They stay overnight? Was it a two-day trip? But anyway, he went to Macon, Missouri, too, which was then a motorcade, so they had to shut all the four lanes down, and he made an impromptu stop in Monroe City before he came back and spoke in Quincy, so... That was a full coverage event, and I can't remember if it was one or a little bit 2 days. But
I think it was just one day. It was a very long day.
But so that was kind of a big deal that he hit every point in our viewing area that we had prime coverage. And I think he was always big about local reporters got first dibs, and so we had a lot of coverage of that.
Yeah. Do you guys have any advice for younger people trying to get into the communication field these days? I know it's not exactly the same as when you guys got into it originally, but what's just some advice you could throw out there?
Do it for the right reasons.
Right reasons.
Don't get into it to think I'm going to be on TV and I'm going to be popular, because I can't guarantee that what TV is going to do for you in 10 years or so. But the element hasn't changed from today, from 20 years ago, from 50 years ago. You're still seeking the truth and seeking the facts and holding people's feet to the fire, and so do it for the right reasons. Get into it to tell good stories and to let people know what's happening. And not every day is going to be a president coming to town. Sometimes you're gonna cover a ribbon cutting, you're gonna cover a tax issue, but cover it. It's important to somebody, that person that you're covering the story. It's important to them. That's their big event to tell.
Yeah,
so tell it.
Awesome.
My best advice to younger folks going into the business is remember it's about people. Mm-hmm. You're going to cover some horrific events, and it's exciting when you get somewhere and you beat the competition, you get it out first or whatever, but it's about people. And I often tell the story, this happened luckily early in my career so I could adjust to it, but we had stumbled on a murder. We had gone to Keokuk, and we were going to do a story about something else, it was me and another reporter, And so we get to the fire department, and they're like, you're not here about the murder that happened this morning? We're like, yeah, we are now. So we knew, this is before social media, we knew we had a leg up on the competition. Yeah. We didn't do a whole lot of live shots at the time, but we pulled off a live shot from Keokuk, and we got the story out. We did our jobs. And I went home that night, and I felt really good about my work day. I'm like, this was great. And then it hit me. I had a great day at work because some woman lost her life. And that really hit hard, and that was a turning point for me to know that there are people on the other side of that TV screen, and when you cover a fatal fire or a car crash, it's about people. I often told others about myself that I was a human being first, a father second, and a journalist third, and that's kind of how I lived with doing the stories, was remember it's about people. People are affected by this.
Yeah, definitely. Wow.
But we, so when we worked at KHQA, it had always been the second-class citizen of the local media. I mean, WGM was always the station, kind of seemed like that's what people went to. We struggled for viewership. Ratings were always poor. But we just kept going and going, and we got Frank Brady came in as general manager and just put a different mindset into the community. And Bob Romine before him, the same thing, just kind of made us think differently that, hey, we can do better. And we worked our tails off. We did different things. And I want to say it was probably 2005 or 6. I can't remember. But anyway, we finally tied them at 6 p.m. newscast. The ratings, we had pulled up. We'd closed the gap. And we thought that was the greatest thing ever. I mean, we finally got there. I don't know if we ever really maintained it, but we closed the gap and became competitive. And that was what was most important. It was, we were going to push WGM at all times. We were going to sometimes beat them to the story and so forth. And then new management came in, and then I was like, oh, well, I got the opportunity. I'm going to go to WGM. I think Chad had the opportunity one time, and I talked him out of it. But anyway. So then I went to WGM and finished my career there for 7 years. And so it was just – it was great there. They had the equipment. They had the toys. They had what you needed to really do it and made sure you had that access. So that was always, I saw, as the advantage. And one night there was a fire in Macomb, downtown Macomb.
I don't mean to laugh. I know the end of the story.
And so I was like, oh, this was late at night. I'm one only person in the newsroom. And I got my crew going. And I was like, oh, we're going to need more for this. So I needed to call my news director, also named Chad. So I got my phone out, and I'm going through it, and I scroll and picks it up. And I'm like, we got a major fire in Macomb. We need to get more crews out there. What do you think? And I hear Chad Douglas of Voigt goes, what? I'm like, whoops. And I didn't even say goodbye. I just like, ugh, I knew I screwed up. And then so then I got a hold of the news director. But eventually KHQA caught up to the story, too.
Yeah, I got to call people. Well, I think I went myself, actually, to that story. So.
Yeah, sorry, 5 minutes later, he just appears.
Sorry,
yeah.
I tipped off the competition to breaking news. But.
Oh, wow. That's an amazing story. So how about we end the podcast with you guys letting everybody know, like, what you're doing now, what events are coming up that they can, how can they contact, where can they reach out, donate to Salvation Army, like that.
So Matt's my boss. Mm-hmm. He's the development director of the Salvation Army of Quincy and Hannibal, and then I'm donor relations coordinator. So we work well together, work very closely together. We do have an event coming up at the end of April. Okay. And it's called Unmasking the Singer. If you're familiar with the show, The Masked Singer, mm-hmm. on Fox, we're doing it locally. We have folks that are singing. It is their actual voice. It is not lip sync. And they're dressed up in costumes, so you don't know who they are. And the goal is to pay to vote, $1 a vote. So if you like a contestant, you pay $20. That contestant gets 20 votes, and then the highest contestant will be unmasked and named the winner. The money then goes to our emergency shelter, mm-hmm. here in town. We're the only shelter within 100 miles that houses men, women, and children. There are a few shelters that will do either just men or women and children. We house anybody, and the money will be used both in Quincy and Hannibal. So,
yeah.
I will say, you know, I've been out of the business. It'll be 8 years this summer. Chad's getting to the 2-year mark, and I have no regrets. Haven't missed it. I enjoy what we do. The TV business has helped us in what we do, I think, because a lot of what we do is donor relations. So when we go knock on somebody's door, there's that instant recognition, and there's a little bit of built-in trust. They have trusted us with, you know, they brought us into their homes for many years. So it's always funny when you sit and visit with somebody personally and like, wow, this is weird to have you sitting on my couch when I'm so used to you being the TV. And that hasn't gone away. Even after 8 years, I still get that recognition, and Chad's getting that. And so that's helped in this career, and that's why I haven't missed it. It's we're doing something very important. We're keeping, you know, people off the streets. We're helping feed people. So there's so much gratification in what we do, but yet what we used to do plays a big role in it. And this has never changed. It is the most confusing thing, but people will get Chad and I mixed up constantly. I mean, if we're sitting together, I don't see much where the similarities are, but right. it you go out in public, even to this day, somebody will carry a conversation, and I realize they're really talking about Chad. Chad will do the same thing. They'll carry conversations like, yeah, I'm not who you think I am. But most of the times we just play along and try to, and sometimes you'll get trapped in the conversation. Like, now I got to reveal that I'm not who they think I am. But it happens today, and it probably will never change.
Just over the weekend.
Yeah.
So got confused.
Yeah. You both have magnetic personalities.
That's it.
Good voices. So it's just, yeah, they're comfortable. I had the same kind of interaction with, I keep bringing up Jeff Dorsey because he was here on my last podcast, and Jeff Dorsey has that radio voice. And so I had never heard his broadcast before because I had never was in Quincy when he was still on the air, and or at least not listening to it. But it sounded like I had heard him 1,000 times before, you know, like, and so it became the easiest conversation I ever had in my life. And so when you become familiar with these people on TV or on the radio, you know, you just become so comfortable that you could have all the confidence in the world that this is Chad. And it turns out it's Matt, you know, but you just feel that familiarity. So you think you're correct. Yeah, I get that.
We also live in a smaller community where you are going to see us off hours. You're not just seeing us on TV. You're going to run into us at the grocery store, at a restaurant or something. So there was always a very personal connection that people felt like, oh, I already know you.
Yeah.
You know? So sometimes it was always hard to have conversations being local. Both of us grew up in this area. Do you know me from childhood, my parents, or do you just know me from TV? So you're like, I don't know how to respond to this conversation.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. All right, gentlemen. Well, thank you so much for coming in and speaking with me about, you know, news broadcasting, technology, presidents. it's been very entertaining and very informative. So I do want to thank you
so much
for coming.
Yeah, enjoyed it. Thanks for the invite.
All right, everybody listening, thank you. If you want to check out any more of our podcasts, please go to qmedia.com. I've been joined today by Matt Schmidt and Chad Douglas. I'll join you next time.